Livewire with Jeff Dorset.
So I was out in Dubai and got back a few days ago. And while I was out there working on a radio station called Golf Radio, the CEO, who used to work at BBC Merseyside, Steve Johnston, comes from West Kirby. And I thought to myself, that would be an ideal lead-in to talk to Andy McCluskey. So welcome, Andy.
Oh, nice to speak to you, Jeff. Yes, indeed. West Kirby's just a peninsula, just a couple of miles away from where I grew up and where I still live.
Yeah, terrific stuff. Now, what about your early inspirations? I mean, I've seen a quote, wanted to know who, when you were growing up in your teens, who inspired you. But I did see a great comment that said, quote from Andy McCluskey, seeing Kraftwerk at the Liverpool Empire in 1975 was the first day of the rest of my life. Now, would they have been your inspirations, or does it go back further to, I don't know, the Beatles? Who inspired you?
Well, strangely enough, although up on Merseyside, yeah, my inspiration, in fact, came from Dusseldorf in Germany, not Merseyside. And Kraftwerk were indeed probably my biggest inspiration. And yes, September 1975, the 11th of September at the Liverpool Empire, and I was sitting in seat Q36, and it was indeed the day of the rest of my life. I remember it clearly.
Terrific. What about the early gigs for OMD? Did you initially go out on your own, or were you supporting people in the early days?
In the very, very early days, we started myself and Paul Humphreys as a dare to do one concert at the fabulous X Club in Matthew Street, directly across the road from the Cavern where the Beatles and all the Merseybee bands used to play about 15 years earlier. We played there in 78. They had a wonderful open door policy bands, so people like ourselves and the Bunnymen and Teardrop Explodes and Frankie Hollywood and Flock of Seagulls and Dead or Alive all started in that club, basically.
Yeah.
But just a couple of gigs first of all there, and we were very fortunate that we got signed to Factory Records from Manchester, and we did quite a few gigs with Joy Division actually in 79. Yeah. Before Ian died, and but then we signed to Virgin. So, and probably the biggest boost we ever got was in the autumn of 1979. We were asked to support Gary Numan on his big after Our Friends Electric and Cars had been two number one hits, and that was an amazing, amazing opportunity for us because we didn't have any money. Said, don't worry, love the music, bought the single, want you to open for me, and I will carry your equipment, you can come on my bus, we will feed you. And in fact, even his mother ended up ironing our shirts. It was a full tour, and exactly a year we played all of those theatres and sold them out ourselves after we've had our first two hit singles.
Yeah, fantastic. Was that straight after Electricity would have been?
Yeah, Electricity was released on Factory Records in April of 79, which is incredible, really, considering we started the band with a crazy name as a dare to do one gig.
Yeah.
And within months, we had our first single out. And within about 12 months, we'd signed to a major label and were making our first album and touring with Gary Numan. It was absolutely whirlwind, but incredible journey we went on in those early days.
Yeah. I love it when you talk about band names. I saw something there about inspirations for OMD came from, what was the band? Dalek, I Love You or something.
Yeah, they were another band actually from Wirral. And I mean, listen, every that played at Eric's that came from the Merseyside area
yeah.
had these absolutely pretentious, preposterous names. All of us did. It had to be done.
Yeah. I mean, I've been reading some time back. I've read it twice now. Paul DeNoyer's book, simply called Liverpool. And it's a wonderful insight for me because over time, I've lost track because we've done so many interviews, Andy, but Ian Brody's been a guest twice. Will Sargent's been on, Eddie London's been on, and it's always great. But the book itself was wonderful, talking about bands who I'd never heard of, but they were big in Eric's or they were big in and around the Merseyside scene. And as you said, with some great names. But I have to compliment Paul DeNoyer because the book itself I thought was super.
Great writer and a great journalist, and he was a champion of the bands out of Eric's and the Liverpool scene in the late 70s. And do you know that one of the biggest bands at Eric's, actually, in the late 70s, never went on to be successful, but it was kind of a supergroup in reverse. It was a band called Big in Japan.
Wonderful, and, yeah, I know.
On drums, they had Bud on to play with Susie and the Banshees.
Yeah.
On bass was Holly Johnson, and then Dave Balfe, yeah, who started Zoo Records and Food Records, who lives in a very big house in the country. Bill Drummond, of course, KLF was rhythm guitar,
yes,
and lead guitar was Ian Brody, Lightning Seeds.
Yeah, Ian's a great guy to chat to. I mean, he's been on twice, and we've had lots and lots of chats about different things as well. But you're right, Andy, about being in the right place at the right time. You mentioned there about Gary Numan and going out and getting a break there. I'll tell you one of the great stories that I remember is talking with Tony Bramwell. Now, Tony Bramwell was the MD of Apple. You may or may not remember, but have you ever met Tony?
I don't recall that I have, to be honest.
No. Anyway, he worked his way up, but how he got the lucky break, right? And I think my memory is correct here, because I opened up the interview and said, is 82 your lucky number? And he said, what do you mean? Well, isn't it an 82 bus that took you to, is it the Lillington Town Hall? I think it was. And he said, a guy comes up and sits next to me on the bus carrying a guitar. He said, my name's Tony. He said, what's yours? He said, George. He said, oh, right. He said, where are you doing? He said, I'm playing at the Lillington Town Hall. He said, can I carry your guitar and get him free? He said, yes. And of course, turns out to be George Harrison. They then form a friendship, and he grows through there with their tour and ends up at MD at Apple.
That's an interesting career trajectory. It's funny how those things work. I mean, we have a story of a strange piece of accidental delight that we sent a cassette to Tony Wilson, who we didn't know was starting Factory Records. We just his club where we played the Factory on our second gig, and his wife got into the car and said, "Tony, what's in the shopping bag here?" I said, oh, it's all the cassettes people who've sent in to Granada Reports, his TV show, for the new label. He said, they're rejects. I'm hip. She put a hand in the bag and pulled out a cassette and went, well, Casper Maneuvers in the Dark, that's an unusual name. Oh, yeah, they played the club. Not my cup of tea, a bit too electronic, a bit too, you know.
Yes.
No, and she put on a cassette, and it was excellent. Look, that's a hit single. He said, no, they're hippie guys from Side with my, she said, that is a hit, sign yes. it. So he said, all right, love, just for you, I'll sign them. So that is how you get a record deal. You get fished out of the bag on into the tip by the record company guy's wife. True story.
Oh, what a wonderful thing. I just love that one. Yes, getting an opportunity there. Now, you've got a tour coming up, but let's just say, pioneers in electronic music there, Andy. I mean, 40 million sales and climbing. One thing that fascinated me, you had or have had 4 US hits as well. Now, it was very difficult to get breakthroughs, I think, in the 70s and 80s in America, because, you know, you look at the situation, and yes, the British invasion and everything worked through there, not just the Beatles and Herman's Hermits and Stones and Kinks, but it became more and more difficult. And, you know, for you to get hits over there was good. Did you tour America?
We did. It was very strange in the early days. Being signed to Virgin Records, there was no Virgin in the US, so they licensed, and they did a deal whereby they gave ourselves, the band Japan, and XTC to a label in America who quite had to do with us, didn't get it, and didn't do any promotion. So we were having massive hits in Europe, and we could not stick in America. And it wasn't until we changed labels in 1984 to A&M, some effort into us. So all of the early hits, like Souvenir, Joan of Arc, Arc Messages, Enola Gay, it weren't hits in America. It was only when we released Locomotion in 1984 that we started to get top 40 hits. And of course, 2 years later, we were asked by John Hughes to do a song in the movie Pretty in Pink.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the thing that really busted America open for us. Yeah. That track was massive over there.
Yeah. True. Now, when you're going out on tour, a mate of mine, Howard Jones, is going to be playing for you, I believe, in London as the support. which is interesting because I always joke with him. He'd never been to America, and I'm on a number of stations over there. And I said, where are you going to be playing? And he said, Las Vegas. I said, oh, right, interesting. Bit hot out there at times. He played Las Vegas, and it was so hot, his keyboard actually was nearly on fire.
Do you know what? Yeah. I think we might have been on that tour with him.
Yes.
In 2016, we were playing in a car park in Las Vegas in sunshine. Well, sunshine. It was about 120 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yes.
But his equipment just failed.
And
it was such a struggle for him. I think in the end, he could get one keyboard to have no sound on it. And he just basically did a kind of piano versions of him with him singing on like he was Billy Joel or something. I remember that gig and I felt so sorry for him. It was absolutely like on that stage.
Yeah, I mean it is a weird place. I mean, they call it Sin City, but it's so strange. The other thing, talking about Howard Jones and his keyboard, the other one I thought was incredible. Tom Bailey was over there from the Thompson Twins, obviously, with Katrina and the Waves and a few other people, and they ended up playing at the Mandalay Bay. But get this, Andy, they were playing while the audience was in the swimming pool.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of weird crowd in Las Vegas. It's, I mean, Tom is another guy that we go way back with. I mean, Port of the Thompson Twins in America in the mid-80s. As part of us trying to get, you know, also going back to Howard Jones, it's absolutely wonderful they're playing with us in London. I wish he was doing the whole thing, but he could only do London.
Yeah.
But it's basically going to be almost a 50th anniversary reunion, because Howard supported us in 1980, just before he had his first hit.
Yeah, new song.
So that's back we go with Howard.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. Now, talking about the tour itself, where you said Howard Jones is with you in London, you know, you're doing a massive amount. You're off and running in Norway, Sweden and Denmark. You're hitting Germany, Poland, Belgium, France and Holland, amongst others. And this always fascinates me, Andy, because I remember some years ago, who was it? Manfred Mann's Earth Band coming to the studio. And I looked at their tour dates and there was like one date in England and they were in Slovenia and Slovakia and Poland. And we were talking about all this. And then a young band came in following them and said, oh, they're listening to us in Bratislava on this radio station. I said, oh, wonderful. So you never know where your music is, but you've got great appeal, haven't you, across the world?
We've been very fortunate. Yeah, fortunate to have had an audience. I think possibly a lot of it is that particularly in the early days, we didn't have sung choruses in English. The synth melody was the chorus. And so it doesn't matter what language is your first language, it's along with the melody because it's not English words. You don't have to learn the words. But yeah, we've sold a lot of records, particularly in Germany. We were very big in Eastern Europe before the war came, and we didn't realize it because now we're able to go over there. In fact, actually, we probably play more concerts in old Eastern Germany than we do in the rest of Germany.
Mm.
So it's amazing to see how your career turns out in different countries. But yeah, the long tour, you're right. We always seem to like start somewhere absolutely blazing in Scandinavia. It'll be a little bit warmer by the time we get to and we're playing in England.
Yeah, I've noticed that when you're in the UK and around Northern Ireland, kicks off in Belfast. You're going to be doing Eastbourne, Winter Gardens. You're going to be in London, Leeds, Newcastle, Manchester, Brighton, and other places as well. So this is a real extensive time for you. When was the last time you were out, Andy, for what might be described as an extensive tour like this one is?
Well, I think the last time we did a big tour where we were doing everything following on from each other was about 6 years ago when we had the last studio album out called Punishment of Luxury. We have done a couple since then, celebrating the 40th anniversary of the band and the 40th anniversary of the Architectural Morality album that had Souvenir and the two Joan of Arcs on it. But yes, just the European section of this tour, I think, is 44 gigs.
Wow.
And then we go to South Africa. Then we have a rest.
Yeah.
We're not doing festivals this summer. And we pick up again in America and South America. In September and October and November.
Wow. Well, and of course, South America is amazing, isn't it? I mean, I look at the crowds there, whether you're being in Brazil or Argentina or Peru or Chile. I mean, the crowds there are phenomenal.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, we haven't played as many gigs as I would have liked. It can be a bit tricky finding a promoter who you can trust, because a lot of them kind of seem to walk with the money after you've done the gig.
Oh, nice.
But we have played some fantastic concerts there, and we're really looking forward to going back. And Mexico is where we have a massive fan base that we didn't really know until about 20 years ago. So it's going to be a lot of gigs.
Super stuff. Well, look, Andy McCluskey, it's great talking to you. I'm pleased that OMD are always doing so well. Wish you well. Tell me about the making of Bauhaus Staircase, which we're going to play in just a sec.
Well, to be honest, I think it may not exist if it was not for COVID. I wasn't sure that I had it in me to sit and kind of drag out of my heart and my soul and my head enough good ideas. But COVID hit in March 2020. Like everybody else, there was nothing to do but sit at home. Yeah. I just happened to have a programming room at home. So yeah. I went, right, well, I'm not going to be bored. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to start finishing off all these songs that I couldn't be bothered because now I've got nothing else to do.
Yes.
And these songs turned out to be a Staircase album, which amazingly charted at number 2 in October.
Yeah,
it's the highest we've ever been in the album chart with a studio album. So after 45 years, we still seem to be doing something right.
You are indeed. So wish you well with the tour. Wish you well with the music. Give a love to Howard Jones when you catch up with him there. But it's as always, Andy, great pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much indeed.
Livewire is produced by Steve Osborne Media. Steve Osborne Media.